Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and today's conversation is about the final report of the Commercial Activity Panel with panel members Colleen Kelly, who's the national president of the National Treasury Employees Union, and Stan Solway, who's the president of the Professional Services Council. Another recommendation touched on A76, and I'm curious, what was that recommendation in terms of A76?
Well, the principal there were two recommendations relative to A76, again, approved by a supermajority, two-thirds, minimum of two-thirds of the panel, not necessarily unanimous. One was that the end state should be a replacement of A76 with this FAR-based process, with what's called the integrated process, if you will, in the report, for the reasons we've already discussed. But the specific A76 recommendation really was a list of 10 or 12 immediate changes you could make, essentially administratively done, without having to go through a whole regulatory or legal process, to improve the A76 process in the short run, because everybody recognized, whether it's a pilot program or a phase-in process or whatever, that you don't just jump right into this. It's going to take a number of months to develop the new methodology. Then you're going to have a phase-in, some mid-course corrections, and so forth. In the meantime, you don't want to stop utilizing the competition tool in government. I think the report's fairly clear on don't stop what you're doing. And so the panel identified and actually did not spend a lot of time on these interim changes, recognizing that our focus was really end state, but there was a set of changes that were designed in the interim to make A76 at least a little bit better, with the recognition that A76 was, in the end, unfixable. And I think one of the critical points with A76, which is contained in the front end of the report, is you can talk about the weakness of the process relative to accurate cost accounting, inequitable treatment of offerors, whether they be a government entity or a private sector entity and so forth. There are a whole set of issues there on both sides of the table. But you also have a process in A76 that is designed to measure the cost of discrete functions. It is not designed, is specifically not designed, to look at not only a best value look at the requirement, but to also look at sort of an enterprise-wide kind of a perspective, which is really kind of the rule of thumb in most organizations today. One quick example. If I'm running a logistics information system for the Army, and I have 400 people involved in running that system, and it costs me $40 million a year to do it in the government, A76 requires you to compete what it costs to run that system in the government versus what it would cost to run that system function to function in the private sector. That would be an A76 cost comparison. The real issue for the Army is, what can I do to my logistics information system that will drive savings throughout the supply chain? And where the savings might occur could be way down at the far end of the supply chain, and they far exceed added cost of that function, if you will. A76 doesn't let you get to that kind of enterprise-wide integrated look. And that's why the report early on makes the statement that it's really a process for another era, because almost everything now we're doing in government has that kind of integrated, complex requirement associated with it.
Is A76 dead?
Well, it's not dead. At least for the interim, it's still alive. And that's why these changes were important. I think in general, they were sound changes that the panel proposed for the interim, especially when it talked about a new emphasis on communication with federal employees in the process, on labor management cooperation in the process, on providing employees with the support to have a real opportunity to build a most efficient organization, which was really missing from the current process. So from that standpoint, there were even some improvements, I believe, that were made in the recommendations of the panel for this interim process. But there were two big things missing from those recommendations, and they were, again, the accountability. From a standpoint of tracking the true costs of what contracts involve once the contract is let and the work moves outside the federal government, there needs to be a better way for the agencies to track costs and also the quality of the services that are provided. And the other thing that continues to be missing is appeal rights for federal employees and the unions who represent them in appealing if they disagree with the results of one of the results of the competition. And that requires legislation to make that change.
There's no doubt that if you're going to ask or give the opportunity to a federal unit to compete for something, they deserve to get the resources to be competitive and to be supported and so forth. I think the report does speak to the need to do that, but it is a continuing challenge within the process. The issue of protest rights is a very complicated one, and let me just be clear that in the principles and in the end state FAR-based process, we all agreed that all parties to the process would have the same appeal and protest rights. Federal workforce only has appeal rights at the command level or the agency level. They don't have the right to go to the legal system, GAO, or under the courts. The reason it's not included in the interim changes is, number one, you can't do it in the interim. It's actually a fairly complicated legal process. As Colleen said, you have to really get into a whole series of statutes. You have civil service statutes. You've got Competition and Contracting Act defining bidders. And so it gets fairly complicated. The second issue is, Our strong belief, and I think we all agreed with this, is that you need to take this, again, look at the whole and not take individual pieces here and there, but really deal with the whole, with all of the principles and link them all together. I do not object. In fact, we supported principles that would have provided those appeal and protest rights under the new FAR-based process, because then you have a system where all the bidders are entitled to have the same responsibilities and thus entitled to the same rights. Getting to that protest issue, which is a big issue and a very contentious issue, is very difficult. I don't believe, for instance, that a labor union should have standing to protest, because there's a whole slew of labor management issues associated with that. I'm not an anti-union person. I'm just saying I don't think that's the appropriate way to go. I don't think individuals, we have a long history in government for in a variety of areas having nothing to do with competitive sourcing, where we don't have individual right of action. But defining an entity, that workforce that's affected, and giving them the opportunity to appeal at the GAO in particular, sourcing decisions that affect and disadvantage them, much like any other bidder, is something I fully support, provided it's done in the context of the broader set of equities.
Let me ask about the last recommendation about the establishing high-performing organizations. What are those?
They are something that NTU supports. Every federal agency needs to move towards that. The problem, again, comes down to resources. And there was not a willingness by the participants from the administration to ensure that resources would be available for agencies or functions within the agencies to strive for high-performing organization status. And so, again, with that recommendation, the NTU Act absolutely supports HPOs and the move towards them, but you can't expect a movement towards them without the support, the resources, and the encouragement and the tools so that employees can move towards there. The employees have the intelligence, they have the talent, they have the experience, they want to do this. They cannot do it if it's not appropriately funded. And there was, as once again, a total lack of commitment of resources to that end.
As a matter of public policy and good government, the idea of a high-performing organization and providing incentives to drive optimal performance with or without competition in the mix is clearly appropriate. The issues with HPOs really come down to several, and without even getting to the resource question, which Colleen appropriately raised, is number one, this is something that's never been done in government, and it's not been terribly successful outside of government in the sense where you don't have a competitive pressure. The idea with HPOs is not just to create a system that provides the incentives and so forth, but to also exempt an entity that qualifies from competition. The question is, how rigorous, what benchmark level, how are you really going to do this? It's never been done. So that actually, more than anything else on the report, is the newest of the new in sense of experience with it. That's number one. Second thing is, and this is a personal view, I think it's a great idea, but I think if I were managing an organization, and I do run an organization, where I have the opportunity to use the competitive marketplace, including in the case of government, that would include where work is currently being performed by federal employees, including them in that competition, that's where I will go to drive my performance and use the HPO, whatever resources, on those functions that for which a competition is not available, inherently governmental, other residual requirements which may not be inherently governmental by definition, but which I'm clearly not ever going to outsource. And companies do this all the time. They retain a certain degree of residual skill and so forth. They're never going to bring the competitive market to bear on that because they consider it core to their mission. That's an area where you don't have the competitive tool, where I think the concept even has greater legs, because I think the issue of whether it should be competed or not is not on the table. And then you really have a high incentive on the part of the resource owners, whether it's OMB or the agency budget tiers, to really resource it to drive high performance.
Well, we're almost out of time, and I want to get a final thought from each of you on terms of where are we and where do we go from here?
We have to stay focused on the issues that brought us to this panel and to ensure that they get addressed appropriately. And through implementation of anything that comes to pass from the panel, whether through the administration or legislatively, we have to ensure that arbitrary quotas are not used. We talked a lot about the issue of competition and how good it is for the government, and yet there is a provision that allows for what's called direct conversion of jobs, where employees don't have the opportunity to compete, and the work can just be moved to the private sector. That should be eliminated, and the panel dealt with that and did not adopt it. In the overriding principles, it's there, but it did not drill down and would not commit to no direct conversions. The issue of accountability, of knowing that the taxpayers are getting the quality of services and that the costs are being appropriately monitored, is one that has to stay in the forefront. And I have to say, just as a final note, the idea that a labor union who is elected by employees to represent employees, who is a legal entity, would not have standing in the courts on behalf of the employees who they were elected to represent, I find appalling.
It's not meant as a personal attack, Colleen. It's just a matter of public policy disagreement. But I feel the report covered a lot of the issues Colleen's talking to. I think it addressed a lot of them. It was never designed to get into the level of detail. In all the meetings we had, we were never going to get to the detail that one would like or need in some areas. I think my hope is that the report now creates a framework for a cooler, more substantive debate, if you will, and discussion in Congress and the administration and wherever, so that we're not dealing with a lot of the vitriol that has dominated this debate for a long time. The issues are on the table. They are well discussed, at least raised in the report. And I think now we have to move forward with a much more rational discussion than has been the case in the past.
I want to thank you, Colleen and Stan, for being with us today.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation about the final report of the Commercial Activities Panel with panel members Colleen Kelly, the National President of the National Treasury Employees Union, and Stan Soloway, President of the Professional Services Council. Be sure and visit us on the web at endowment.pwcglobal.com. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's very interesting conversation. Again, that's endowment.pwcglobal.com. This is Paul Lawrence. See you next week.